The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
All right, thanks for being with us. We, of course, are always brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their support. I'm Brad Sesmat. Thanks for jumping on in. Today, we are going to go deep on a couple of fronts. One, not as much with Larry Fitzgerald, the Hall of Famer. He is having his annual Fitz Supper Club coming up. And our conversation on a bunch of things, including if he signed his retirement papers or not, will come up shortly. And then later, we're going to get deep into the weeds on sports, mental health, the fun old days with Jake Plummer's roommate, Gus Farwell. Gus was the backup to Jake Plummer, but his story is one that you're going to want to hear. And there's a lot there to unpack with Gus Farwell. That comes up in a little bit as well. But we start with Larry Fitzgerald. Fitz Supper Club is coming up, his annual charity event. But first,
did you ever sign your retirement papers?
No, I have not signed.
You've never signed your retirement papers.
I haven't signed retirement papers.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are you involved with now from a business standpoint? Last time you said I got actors and musicians, and you still doing that?
So I have, you know, restaurants, multifamily, commercial development. I am heavy in the venture, been doing that for a long time.
Yeah.
And so, and then I have the foundation. So, like, there's no dull days.
No.
And, I'm probably busier from a time perspective than I was, you know, even when I played.
Yeah, that's good that you're in that space in life.
Yeah.
I saw where you, of course, we have to have silverware, the hardware. You're in that space in life where I saw you speak at an event at the Fiesta Bowl where a young man asked about what advice you'd give, and you used two words, compound interest.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was brilliant. You know, what are some of the words of wisdom that you've been able to put out there that you've learned now from being the pro athlete, doing this community side, the charity side? What have you learned? What are you giving back?
I'll say you follow your interests, you know, follow things that are exciting to you. And not everything that excites me is going to excite you. Not everything that excites you is going to excite her. Like, you know, we're all different beings, and you know, you have to find kind of your niche and what, you know, makes you happy. You know, when my feet hit the ground, you know, I feel enthusiastic and energized about what the day holds, right?
Yeah,
and like,
sure.
That's a good place to be. Like,
yeah.
I used to always tell people playing football, I did it for 17 years. I didn't feel like I worked a day in my life. Mm-hmm. It's something I truly, truly loved. There was hard days. There was days that were difficult to go on after you got your butt kicked, right? But still, you know, you were doing something you truly enjoyed doing. And similar to you, you know, you do something that you really enjoy. You get to share information with people who are interested in topics that you're interested in. That's a joyful pursuit in life. And so I tell kids that all the time, you know, sports, unfortunately, there really is always an expiration date,
mm-hmm.
right? And you don't particularly know when that date is. Like, you can do this, you know, Walter Cronkite and some of the great journalists of time have done it for a long
time,
into their 70s and 80s. They can do it as long as they want to do it. As an athlete, you don't have that luxury, so you need to really start focusing on things that you're also interested in and you're passionate about, that you can have an off-ramp when it's done, because, you know, it's difficult if you don't have, you know, something to kind of do, you know, to occupy your time, because if you get done, you retire at 31, 32, 33, you got a long life to live.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you want to be able to fill it with things that you're passionate about.
I always talk about lost souls,
mm-hmm.
guys that finish playing,
mm-hmm.
and they don't have the nice table.
Yeah.
They don't have the nice car. They don't have this. They didn't plan. Things happen. They're not recognized in public, and they don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them come over here and say, hey, man, I want to host a show. And then they find out it's work.
And
they go a different direction. And so I think what you're saying is something that is necessary to tell young players, because from my point of view, you left at the right time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if you ever sat and looked in the mirror and said, I should have come back. I should have played.
No, I was happy with the decision I made. I chose to kind of, you know, just walk out the back door based on where we were as a country. You know, we were in the midst of, I had never been in a worse time. Maybe you might have, but during 2020, I mean, we played our opening game against the 49ers, and there was not a soul in the stadium, right? It seemed and felt so foreign to me. And so when I got done, like, there was way bigger pressing issues in our nation. Mm-hmm. There was turmoil. There was infighting. The capital markets were struggling. Like, there was so much going on that were more important than some washed up football player announcing his retirement, right? It just seemed like it wasn't the appropriate thing to do. And the way I kind of try to make my amends, I would say, or say yeah. thank you to the communities by continuing to serve it. And I'll do that until the day they put me in a box.
Yeah. No, that's yeah. good. That's good. It's like visiting with Charles Barkley back in the day. He would always read the green and purple section of USA Today. Mm. You're old enough to know. Mm. It wasn't sports. Yeah. You know, there was just other things that were of interest. And I think that someone like yourself who just has a lot of things going on, I could go on and on with you about being a high school football dad mm-hmm. and what you've learned, but that would take away from this.
Yeah.
So we can save that for another time. If people want to get involved in this, how would they do so?
Well, you can go onto the LarryFitzgeraldFoundation.org website. You can learn about not just this event coming up in late April, but also all of our community activations. What I really love doing is, you know, when people would say, hey, how can we get involved? They come and show up to one of our mobile mammogram activations. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. they either do registration or they kind of walk the women through the procedures that they're going to go through. And, like, we love having that interaction and people will be able to kind of get their hands involved.
Yeah.
with what we're doing. And that's just as good as writing a check, right? Because you're actually really making a positive impact, you know? Or, you know, we had an activation not long ago, and there was a 60-year-old woman who was going to get her first mammogram, and she brought her daughter with her, you know, 40 years old for her first. So, like, being able to see people's reluctancy, you know, and maybe mistrust of the healthcare system kind of changing, you know, and that 40-year-old, you know, when her daughter gets of age for her first mammogram, will have no reservations about it because she saw her mom and her grandma do it. So, like, seeing that change is what it's all about and what motivates us to continue to stay on this road.
Changed life will change a life.
Absolutely.
That's what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
You're a life changer.
Yes, sir. Thank
I appreciate your time as always.
You,
good
pleasure.
Seeing you.
Congratulations again.
Thank you.
Yep.
All right, as promised, let's turn our attention to the where are they now, which is code for they're old. No, I'm just kidding. Gus Farwell's with us. Gus is someone that I met, and for those of you that are diehard Arizona State football fans, and guess what? You've died hard at times through the years, but not now. Gus is someone that I, from afar, watched, covered as the backup quarterback to Jake Plummer back in the day. And then Gus went on his own way. He joins us today from Barcelona, Spain. And his journey is one that I think for anybody who's getting involved in sports, business, that they would just be like, what? This is the backup to Jake Plummer? Well, no, this is Gus Farwell. He's his own dude. And we're going to have some stories, maybe, I'm hopeful, from Gus. But yeah, if I would have told you back in the day, growing up, that, look, your life journey is going to take you to the point where you're singing opera during COVID, and you're a backup to this dude, Jake Plummer, what would you have said?
Well, first of all, I would have been disappointed that I was just a backup to Plummer, you know, that I couldn't beat him out, first of all. That would have been disappointing. It was such an amazing journey. I mean, I at first when I was in high school, I never thought I was going to end up at Arizona State, and just by a sheer stroke of luck, I ended up at ASU, and now I just absolutely wouldn't trade it for the world, and for to be a part of that team and that experience and everything else with, you know, all the usual suspects, including, you know, the late great Pat Tillman. And then to kind of go and, you know, had some sort of unfortunate events kind of happen, which kind of led to my departure from football and went and kind of followed my other passion, which was the arts, and went and now, yeah, living here in Spain in Barcelona and certainly couldn't have predicted ever. I still don't believe what happened during COVID. It was such a strange I like to call it the strange, special, yet special time. But yeah, I feel beyond fortunate to have lived the life that I've lived and to have experienced so many different things along the way. Most importantly, the people that I've gotten to meet is really, really special.
I'm going to throw some names at you and tell me how they're interwoven within your life, if you're comfortable doing it. How is Tom Brady woven into your life?
So Tom Brady, he and I actually came out so we graduated both in 1995. We were both in the Central Coast section of California, CCS, and he played at Serra High School. I was at Los Gatos High School, and we never actually got to play against each other, but we went to Combine together before our senior year, the California Combine, and then in the rankings of the 1995 season, I was fortunate enough to be ranked first team all CCS. And I did not start my junior year. I had a kind of number of things. My father died when I was in high school. I had to take some summer school the year before my junior year. So I didn't start as a junior, and then I played as a senior, and I was lucky enough to be first team all CCS. And some guy named Tom Brady was like somewhere in the honorable mentions list. So I felt like as time, because I did walk away from football due to some unfortunate events. Again, I had a terrible death just 2 weeks after the Rose Bowl. And to watch him go on and do what he's done, I mean, what an amazing quarterback. But it was tough to watch for a lot of years. Yeah. He just never seemed to go away.
But you were first team.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was third team.
Yeah, he was somewhere. He was like third honorable mention, I think. Third in the honorable
mention.
Way
down there compared to you.
Yeah, it wasn't first team or second team. And then he was like down in the – yeah, so, you know, I mean, I jokingly say, you know, greatest of all time. Well, maybe not in 1995, but the rest he can have.
If Bruce Snyder doesn't come into your life, where are you today?
Man, you know, Bruce –
same place, or is it someone on his staff that if without this person – on his staff, you and I aren't talking today about this stuff.
Yeah. You know, Bruce was a special, special guy. And Bruce just had this amazing ability to sort of just bring us all together, and his ability to go out and find talent. But it was really the culture that he created that when I was there, I was lucky enough, again, just a great guy, an amazing, amazing man, an amazing sort of manager of the team. His whole one at a time set the whole precedent for everything that we would accomplish in that 1996 season. And just a really, really special individual, a special man who cared about us so much as players, not just or as people, as opposed to players. And some of the stories with him and the connections that he made with guys. I mean, we still talk about him all the time. And I mean, even his family and how special his family is to all of us. That just kind of shows you how truly special he really was.
You have referred to it already a couple of times here in the opening minutes. You went through some tough stuff, very tough stuff. Loss of your father and some other things as well. Did he help you through those? Were you comfortable enough to walk in and say, hey, coach, I just need to dump in a safe place and here's what's going on?
You know, unfortunately, I wasn't that clever. I wish that I would have. I wish that I would have reached out. I really wasn't. I don't know if I wasn't capable of talking about it at the time. And that not only included Coach Snyder and the entire staff, but almost all of my friends and the players. The couple of weeks after the Rose Bowl, when my friend was killed in the car wreck, I really didn't have the capacity to speak to anyone about it. And I was in a really tough, dark place and went out for spring football. I had lost so much of my I basically went from one of the most exciting times in my life, which was Jake and I were roommates. You know, not only was I his backup, but we were roommates during that 96 season. And he had told me that he wanted me to take over the team when he was done. And then, you know, we have the Rose Bowl. It's disappointing, but went home for a couple of weeks. Jake and Juan came out for the East-West Shrine game and stayed at my house. And it was just a really, I mean, the Rose Bowl was obviously disappointing, but it was a really exciting time for me. I'm like, okay, this is my time now. This is like, let's get going. And I went back to ASU, just geared up and ready to go. And found out when I got there, I called home to my family that my best friend, her father and her 14-year-old brother had been killed in a car wreck by a drunk driver. And I just kind of went off the rails from there and went out for spring ball. My heart wasn't in it, and it was really, really, really tough. So I wish I would have had the capacity to reach out to the guys, and so many of the guys didn't even know why I left. They had no idea. I mean, even great friends like Kyle Murphy, remember a few years back, him and I having this conversation, he said, man, I had no idea. He said, I would have come and picked you up and brought you to every single practice if I could have. But that just shows you the kind of guys and the characters, and the character of that team. It was a special time. And like I said, I wouldn't trade it for the world.
What I tell people in my world is you never know what someone's going through, and you have to have grace. This dude up here, it's not me on a motorcycle in my office. That's my best friend in life. That was best man in my wedding. He died unexpectedly of a very rare disease. I didn't know how sick he was. He didn't tell me how sick he was.
Wow.
He died in the emergency room. Resuscitated several times, just an awful, awful, awful. And if I had known, if he had just said, hey, I need a lung transplant, he had what was called scleroderma, hardening of the. And 2 weeks later, UCLA Medical Center calls and says, we have a pair of donor lungs for him, and he was gone. So I carried that around with me, trying to do this and be the best father and be the best husband. And I spoke at two of his funerals and at the hometown when all that stuff, shed a few tears, didn't really do anything except stuffed it. And leading up to this, Gus, where it was like 6 weeks later, I wake up in the middle of the night one night just bawling my eyes out. I go to my doctor and said, what's up? He said, you had anything traumatic happen lately? Yeah. And he said, oh, it's just your body releasing. You haven't grieved properly. You haven't released everything that's inside of you properly. So you're telling me the story that you went through. I get it. I'm right there alongside of you saying I had to experience that in my life at one point in time.
Yeah, it's I wouldn't wish it on anybody. But at the same time, I think it's done a lot to sort of shape and form who I am and has helped me to appreciate how precious the time that we have is. And why I have spent so much of my time with my families, especially my girls growing up. I've passed on a number of career sort of things probably along the way that because I was always scared that I'd go the way, you know, my father died when he was my age, actually. I just turned 48 this year, and my father died of pancreatic cancer at 48. And so it's always been there on the back of my mind. And I always just wanted to be here for my kids. And thankfully, I've been able to do that so far. And I hope that continues. I always think that these things are gifts along the way, because they do shape us so much. It's very, very difficult to see at the time. And carrying that stuff with you without properly sort of dealing with it. I mean, I think I still constantly, you know, it's almost like being an alcoholic. It's like it never really goes away. It's just something that's there. The scars never really fully heal, like, you know, and sometimes you don't even want them to heal. You know, sometimes it sounds crazy, but sometimes you get used to the sort of the sadness and the pain about it. And you carry that with you for so long that you're almost kind of scared of who you are without it, which sounds crazy.
No, I mean, it's like every day I do this show, every day he's over my shoulder. Every day I have people that say, what's the story with you on the motorcycle? It's like, heck no, 6'8" motorcycle riders don't happen. It just doesn't work. But I think it's just normal. Gus Farwell with us for a few minutes. If you don't go to Arizona State and you go play football elsewhere, what are you doing today? I phrased that question, I asked you earlier in a way of if your life took you a trajectory, but what I want to get into is what did ASU teach you? Everybody can say, oh yeah, I'm a Wildcat, bear down, I'm a Sun Devil, forks up, I'm at Syracuse, I'm at USC, fight on, whatever.
Yeah.
But what did Arizona State instill in you?
Man, that is a heck of a question. It's tough to quantify, I think, to put it, acutely into words. I think that being a Sun Devil is a very, very special thing. When I started to work for the Pac-12 network, I got a couple of years in before the Pac-12 went kaput.
Yep.
It was a really special thing to kind of go around and be able for really the first time. And when you're traveling as a player, you get to go in the stadiums, you kind of get like a snapshot, but it's really limited to what you get to see. And then, working for the network, I sort of got to get a deeper dive into those different programs and meet the people around those programs. And man, are we blessed to just be able to call Tempe home. It is a truly special place. I don't know what I'm doing because I don't know who I am without all of the guys on that team. It is a truly special place. It is something that I'm really proud of. And it just gets deeper. I think it's one of those programs I've seen, and again, this is not a comment on another university, but my brother played for the University of Oregon. He was a 4-year starter. He's, I think, third or fourth all time leading tackler for Oregon. And, I feel like, and this is just viewing from the outside, he doesn't have the same kind of connection to the university that I feel towards Arizona State. I don't think he's treated the way that I feel like us alumni get treated, especially now with Coach Dillingham and Graham Rossini and everything else going on. It's just a special place to come back to. And it just feels like the legacy there. I mean, I remember sitting there with Coach Kush and having just great conversations, and you just feel the legacy and the time of it. And, and again, I don't want to talk about other universities, but I just know that ASU is a really special place filled with an incredible, special group of people. And man, how I always say that we're the luckiest fan base in the world. And we win the national championship every year because as alumni, we get to go back to Tempe and watch fall, beautiful fall weather games on a perfect playing surface. Yeah. And now, now to be back in our winning ways, it's, is it fun. I love it. I can't wait for the 26th season to start.
Most difficult class you took at ASU.
Oh, introduction to theater, which sounds ridiculous.
Really?
Yeah.
Like math or English or none of that stuff. Theater.
No, it's a funny one because what they did, I was a theater major at the time. And so what ended up happening was they were getting too many transfer students. People were getting there and they're going like, oh, what am I going to major in? And they see theater on the list and they go, oh, that sounds fun and easy. I'll just take that. And so what they took is they took an advanced high level course, as a screening mechanism and dropped it to freshman level, entry level, intro to theater. And it was actually a junior senior level class. And I don't know how it happened, but I got put into 17 units when I showed up as a freshman, which was not a good thing. And, we were also tested. We were given sort of assessment tests when we showed up, whether or not we would require tutoring or not. Unfortunately, I did too well on those tests and thus did not require tutoring. It was not mandatory that I showed up for tutoring. I wish it was. I also picked the two most time consuming things on campus. I was I was very lucky to go get into that theater department. It's a great department. I mean, to have ASU Gamage there and everything else that goes along with it, the music department. And I was brought in by my academic advisor with the dean of the department. This is before school even started. And they said, you know, we're really worried about you. And I said, oh, God, already? What did I do? You know, what? Usually it takes a people a while to be worried about me. And they just said that, you know, you've picked the two of the most time consuming things on campus. And, you know, it can be a lot. And they were right. And they're, you know, I was taking 17 units. I was in the main stage Shakespeare play, also playing football in the fall.
Wow.
And, you know, I had five classes from 7 a.m. to noon. I still remember my schedule. We had, so five classes from 7 to noon. We had meetings from, or I had to be in the gym from noon to 2, meetings from 2:30 to 4, practice from 4 to 6:30. I had to leave practice 10 minutes early to be at rehearsal by 7 o'clock to 11. And, you know, which my coaches loved, by the way. Hey, coach, I got to go on my theater rehearsal. You know, that's why my nickname was Shakespeare. And so...
could you imagine today...
Telling your coaches that? Yeah, like, hey, I'm going
to
go.
I got a bolt. I have to go to theater rehearsal. What was your role?
I was Angelo the Goldsmith in A Comedy of Errors.
You remember your lines?
I do not.
Could you give me a sampling of your...
I just remember there was one where I had to be really forceful and say, give me the chain. I just remember that.
Like, in the voice of Shakespeare's play.
Yeah, it's... you know, there's a lot to it. I'm not sure I can really break it out right now.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
I'm sure that, you know, asking you to go devils, everybody has you do that. I'm not going to do that. I'd rather you work on your Shakespeare today, because I've got clips of you doing go devils down at the Peach Bowl that are just classic, I must say. It's the beauty of this thing. You can just capture all sorts of great stuff.
The Peach Bowl was one of my favorite trips of all time. I mean, top five trips, maybe ever. And
it was the company you were with. Come on.
It was the company I was with. And you had a very big part to play in all of that. And I mean, two dinners at the College Football Hall of Fame. I don't know how that happens. You know, it certainly doesn't happen if you're not there. And but just spending time with Jake, you know, any time I get to spend with him is just precious. And we were like a couple of 12-year-old kids running around in that stadium, just having a blast. And what a game. I mean, obviously we didn't like the result, but I mean, I that was every motion I think I've ever felt in a single game, which what else can you ask for as a football fan and alumni, and to see your team out there just absolutely give it everything they've got. And, you know, what a time to be alive. What time to be an ASU Sun Devil.
You and Jake, like, you've laughed together a lot, right?
Yeah.
Have you cried together a lot?
Oh, sure. For sure.
Yeah. At the Peach Bowl or?
I don't know if we didn't really have tears. I mean, maybe there, but there have been times, you know, Jake and I are really close and, sure. You know, he's as everyone, you know, I think it's harder. That professional football life, I think people think, you know, they see the money, they see the checks and they see that, and they just think that it's just this easy breezy life. And, I think Jake will be the first to tell you that that's not true at all. And it's, the life of a professional athlete has its many, many challenges. And so, yeah, that's the beauty of that guy and why I love him so much is because he is a very, you know, sensitive soul, and he's such an interesting juxtaposition of the most just wonderful, sensitive soul and the most fierce competitor you've ever met in your entire life. Mm. And that's what makes him so much fun and just a great guy and what a face and a representative for not only the university, but I think of college football in general.
Yeah, you're there, though, too, for the university, I must say. you're a great representative. What can you do that he can't? And you should say sing, but what can you do that he can't?
You know, that's a good question.
Try to help him
sing. Thing, Jake, what people don't appreciate about Jake is Jake's a hell of a musician. He is the single best whistler of that I have ever heard in my entire life. And I've heard quite a few people whistle. Hmm. But he whistles like, I mean, I wish I could whistle like he can. But let's see. I can't remember the exact win-loss record, but I'm going to say that I can take him in tape ball, which is what we used to play in our living room with a broken broom and a piece of rolled up duct tape. Maybe I could get him in Yahtzee too. Yahtzee was religion in our house. It was, we used to do these decathlons where we would do all these sporting events and everything else. And then it would culminate with Yahtzee as the final event. We were nuts. We were a bunch of clowns, but we had so much fun doing it.
You told me a story, and for the sake of the audience, this isn't an X-rated story or even R-rated. It was fans of ASU the night that you beat Nebraska. Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting with you, by the way, at the College Football Hall of Fame, and you told this story to me as we were walking around.
Yeah.
And it was when you guys came back to your apartment that night after the 19-0 drubbing of Nebraska. What was on your front porch? Do you remember?
Yeah. There was a nice little, I think the first one was a 6-pack of beer. Okay. And then as we kind of looked around, we were just like, there, I mean, how often do you just find a 6-pack, a cold beer just sitting on your front porch? And, we're like, okay. And then with every passing game, the 6-pack kind of got bigger and bigger and it culminated in a case of beer by the, I think the last game would have been U of M. So, and we still to this day have no idea who it was. We do not know. But if they're out there watching, we thank you. The good old house is 224 East Carter. I think the university should buy it and turn it into some sort of strange memorial. That was a heck of a house. It was a lot of fun.
You and Jake go in on it together, you know.
Yeah, I might. Hey, you know, maybe we can do that.
Get it as an Airbnb. If you're a true Sun Devil fan, here's where you stay and all that. Hey, by the way, this is where they played Yahtzee and drank beer.
Yeah.
That's fun. Did you two ever get into a fight?
No.
Like even yelling at each other?
No. Never really. Well, that's not to say that Jake never yelled probably at me, because Jake had this thing where he set the tone for everything on the field, right? So he had this ability to go from sort of, he would be totally playing grab ass, if I can say that, and joking around, just being silly as silly can be, because he is silly when he wants to be. And then in an instant, he would just flip to just laser focus. Okay, that's gone. That's done. We are now locked in, right? And if you even continued joking around for another 5 seconds, he would just turn and rip your head off. Mm. Like you had to follow. And that's not to say like, that's just how he was. Because a lot of guys don't have that ability to switch back and forth, but he did. And so when he made that switch, everybody else had to switch, and it was not tolerated that you kept joking around.
Okay, so let me jump in on that then.
Sure.
I'm watching at the Peach Bowl, and you two are on television a lot. I'm sure you heard from your friends, Jake in particular.
Yeah.
Are you two down the stretch yelling at each other about what should happen next and doing play-by-play on the sidelines as the Peach Bowl is going through?
No. So, but with we were shaking each other. I wish there was a picture of it somewhere, but I think when we sort of did the tying touchdown, I think I picked him up and carried him for like 10 yards down the field. And so I don't even remember, right? Because it was just so, it was so crazy and exciting. But one of the things that he had told me at halftime, he said, a little birdie said, do not say anything. But he goes, a little birdie told me that they've got the UCLA throwback play in there. Mm. And I said, oh. And so I was constantly looking for that. And right when I saw the formation, he was down on a knee and I grabbed him by his shoulders. And I'm like, this is it. This is it. Because I could tell by just the way Scataboo was lined up just a little bit deeper than he normally was.
Yeah.
And sure enough, that was it. And that's actually that's the play where I picked him up and I carried him down the field. That was definitely it. But he, what was really cool was when Sam Levitt did that, that incredible scramble and made that run a la Jake Plummer, 1996 Rose Bowl.
Yep.
Jake was so fired up. I'm pretty sure that that's when they cut to him, on the TV, and Jake was like pumping his fist, and he was, again, Jake was so locked in to what was going on. And I truly believe that he was watching it in a different way than everyone else was, because he's like playing it in his mind, almost like a video game. Like he's, and Sam Levitt's doing exactly what he would have done, because Jake can see it faster than anyone else can when that hole opens up. And he just saw it and he knew exactly what he was doing. And he turned to me right after that moment. And he goes, they're going to put that right up against mine in the Rose Bowl. Mm. And he, in the moment, he didn't need to watch the replay. He didn't need to see it in slow motion. He knew in that instance that that was almost the exact same run that he had done in the Rose Bowl, which is a really cool moment.
Yeah. No, that gives me kind of chills. That's great sports moments there. When are you performing next?
It's a good question. I'm hoping to put something together in the fall in Arizona. So we've got, and potentially got some stuff I'm doing, but on this side of the pond in the summer, potentially have a gig in France that, is being set up. And, but yeah, in the Valley, I'm really hoping to do something again, a la the concert 2 years ago in Gamage. But we'll see. We're working on it.
See you out here for spring football.
I'm going to be on the West Coast as of mid-April, and so I'm hoping to get out there on the 25th and then potentially come out for a week in May. So,
listen to you. You sound like this. I have to go through your publicist now. Like, well, I'm going to be on the West Coast. And then you need, like, you know, you're big time, dude. What? I mean, what?
It's just a lot of miles. It sounds more romantic than it is.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Look, I appreciate chopping it up with you. Safe travels, stay well, and I'll see you soon.
Brad, likewise, thanks for everything that you do for the Sun Devil Nation and the Valley and Arizona in general. And it's really been great to get to know you, and look forward to hanging out soon.
Gus Farwell, and we're back with more after this timeout.